Hello, I'm Doug Kretz. This is the Bispark Show. This is a very special edition of the Bispark Show. It's the first time we've done this with a live studio audience. We're inside of the Microsoft Envisioning Center, which is where we envision things. We're with a whole host of, we have about 20 or so, I'm lying, it's a little less than that, but there's about 20 or so Bispark members, and we're talking to CEO and President of Pipeline, based in Kansas City, Joni Cobb. Joni, welcome to the show, and it's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We've met before last year, and I gave, I don't know what number class that was, but it was a class in your fellowship program who came, and they were learning about technology and business in Silicon Valley, and we talked about social media. Can you tell the people out there exactly what it is? What is the fellowship program? What is the Pipeline program? And then we'll get into how it came to be and what it does.
Sure, and I'm happy to do that. And just might I mention that that was not just any fellow class that you spoke to that year. That was our first regional class of fellows that hailed from three states. So it was actually a really important time in our organization. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Pipeline, yes, is a fellowship. So it's very different from other organizations. You know, there's a lot of noise out there in the market, wonderful noise about accelerators and incubators and mentoring organizations and things of that sort, and those are all wonderful and fabulous, but we are distinguished from that in that we are a fellowship organization. So our design is to pick the best and brightest entrepreneurs that are really already past those initial activities such as an accelerator.
Oh, we lost her. So that's it for the show. We're going to actually send you all home. No, we'll just wait for her to come back on again.
Designed to keep you involved for the long term so that as our entrepreneurs create additional companies, they have each other in the network to lean on.
Okay, so it's kind of like a distributed network, right? It's not so intensive that it's, I may have missed a little bit of that because you broke up. It's not like a traditional accelerator. No, it's okay. It's not like a traditional accelerator program because it's not like an intensive, you must be in the same place at the same time. Is it almost like an on-demand program for your mentorship? Are you able to just call on people as you need them?
Not the first year. The first year is very much structured. We have 4 3-day modules that you are absolutely required to be at. They move around the region. We do 2 in Kansas City, 1 in Nebraska, and 1 out in the field like we did when we came to Silicon Valley. And that's a very intensive initial year that does have requirements, but it is a year, not a 3-month launch or anything of that sort. And you're doing this while you're growing your existing company. This is not conceptualizing the launch of an idea. So it is structured. It does have demands. It goes over a year. But then after you graduate the fellowship year, yes, it is much about being on demand as you grow your company over the years.
So let me ask a question then about your location, because I actually lived in Omaha, Nebraska for a while, and I know Omaha, Nebraska as a place where you can get fast food, you can go to the mall. I grew up with a lot of kids who are farmers, actually, and they stayed in the family as a farmer for many years, I mean, many generations. I don't often or immediately think about a tech startup or a cloud startup or something like that. Why would you choose to sort of grow this entrepreneurial community in the Midwest? I mean, is there something going on there that we're missing? And I'm not trying to be offensive because I used to play football in Omaha, so I don't want to make anybody mad there. But what do we not know about the Midwest?
Well, I do think that if you have not been around the entrepreneurial community in our region, which our region encompasses kind of Missouri, Nebraska, and Kansas, you are missing something. You know, especially if you were in Omaha, if you would note, if you went back there, that town is on fire with entrepreneurial energy, and Kansas City as well. So you are missing something in that concerted effort from all parts of the community, whether it's funders, the entrepreneurs themselves. They've got a great angel network in Nebraska, same thing in Kansas City. So there is something to be said about the Midwest. And we have a lot of national advisors, many of which are from Seattle and Silicon Valley, that say there are entrepreneurs in the Midwest understand how to bootstrap. They understand meeting needs. A lot of the companies that you see are really building things that make a difference in the quality of life. I think there's something to be said about the ethic in the Midwest that's being matched right now by this amazing network and entrepreneurial, you know, mojo that is obviously going on around the globe. So if you haven't been to the Midwest, I invite you back.
Not right now. It's snowing.
It is a little icy right now.
But what's come out of there so far? I mean, I can think of Battle Bears, which had a pretty successful... Battle Bears, I can't remember the name of the company that made Battle Bears, but there was a very successful game that was launched recently. Are there any big deals that we should know about? Anything happening?
Sure, certainly. Well, then you're talking about Ben Vu, who is a Pipeline member, who was our Innovator of the Year last year, which kind of is our competitive bragging rights that we give out at the end of the year with Skyview Entertainment, and he is an Omaha-based entrepreneur. You know, just last week, Kauffman Foundation held their global competition, the Get in the Ring competition, and the winner of the global competition was Toby Rush of iVerify, who was the very first year of Pipeline. Mm-hmm. We have two entrepreneurs that have exited. Davion Ross had Digital Sports Ventures, Bruce Young with Innovadex, who both exited their companies and just last month announced the beginning of a new company, Shot Tracker. And I think they've met with some of the Microsoft execs as they were doing this. They've met with the Fitbit guys. They're certainly onto something in the basketball and innovation arena. But, you know, in addition, we've got some amazing life science companies, Orbis Biosciences, Osteogenics. And my board just couldn't even stand it anymore. He had to quit his old company and just started his own pharmaceutical company for pediatric pharmaceuticals. So I could talk forever about our entrepreneurs, but I think the thing that's so amazing is we're not just seeing startup, we're seeing exit, and we're seeing serial entrepreneurship.
But is the investment money, you know, while we're on this topic, is it only coming from the Midwest, or are you finding that it's a cross-national investment, or is it just people who have kind of grown up their wealth in the center of the region?
Well, that is an interesting and somewhat loaded question, depending on who you talk with, but I'm pretty candid about this. Okay. What we absolutely find is that that initial money is definitely local. We have a really great group of angel groups in Kansas City, Wichita, Nebraska, Oklahoma, St. Louis that work together to bring local money to the table to get you up to that clip where maybe you're at about $1 million. What we're finding after that is more money coming in from the coast. Ben, who you just spoke, well, actually not coast, that would be Chicago. That's a different kind of coast. But yeah. Lightbank just did a round with Ben's company, Skyview Entertainment. One of our entrepreneurs was Boston, VC-backed. They definitely are looking to groups from distant shores. But at the end of the day, if we don't have that initial startup cash locally, we're in a lot of trouble, and we have been able to put that together.
So let me ask you, let's get into some technical aspects of like building a company. Are you finding, you know, there's this thing called the talent gap, and there's also these pioneer gap where people who come up with ideas have a really nice, interesting, fundable idea in terms of conceptually, but there's not really that expertise there. Do you find any of that problem where maybe people are asking for money, not certainly in the startups that have been successful, but do you see that kind of pattern happening in the Midwest where people say, I have a great idea, now let me go out and get money just so I can start the idea? Or do you see people maybe doing things like coming up with revenue first and then going out and getting that seed money to scale up? I mean, how do the dynamics work out there?
But I think what you were asking is, are we finding people that just have scrappy ideas that go get funding and then give it a go? Or are we finding that people have to get traction and revenue first? Was that your question?
That's what I'm asking. Are there a bulk of them proving their traction first over just saying, okay, fund me because I'm the only one who's come up with this idea?
Yeah. I would definitely say that the bulk of them are getting traction first, with this exception. Recently, the Sprint announced that they were starting a TechStars accelerator, powered by accelerator in the area of mobile health, and they're gearing up and recruiting their first class right now. And certainly, it's opening up people's eyes to the ideas of funding or looking at these companies that are really that early in the process. The other area that I would say is with our entrepreneurs that are starting to exit and start over, They're having success in raising money, you know, obviously before they really get that far down the chute, because people really believe in what they're building and their ability to build teams that can get it done. So those would be the exceptions. Other than that, I think we really are in the show me state and the Midwest, where investors like to have some sort of proof. There are some really great government programs and things of that sort that have been around in the Midwest that will look at more proof of concept, et cetera. But I would say in the Midwest, you know, people want you to show them why you're investment worthy, far so more than what, you know, you see in Silicon Valley. That is for certain.
Do you think, and this will be the last question about investment, because I don't like to talk about it too much because I feel like it gets too much buzz, but do accelerators disrupt the traditional VC and angel game, or is it, or these accelerators, and I don't put your community in that category. I think you're a very different thing. But do you think that disrupts the traditional VCs going out and finding sort of hidden talent and investing in those companies and helping them grow? And is it bringing far too many people to the table, or is it bringing too many ideas to the table when they can't get funded? Or do you think that's all kind of a myth? Because we've asked a couple of investors about this, and there's very different answers from every one of them.
Well, I think, you know, what I can bring to the table is the perspective of an accelerator in Kansas City and in the Midwest. I think that you're going to get a different answer from me around this, but I think that's where my value is, to couch it in the terms of the Midwest. I think it's an advantage to have the accelerators like we're seeing in Kansas City, in that, you know, there's investors in Kansas City in our region that are already there, that are active angels, that are in the game, and they're full force. But then we see a bit of a lull. We see a lull in some of, you know, Kauffman Foundation, Ted Zoller, a senior fellow, did a whole mapping of deal makers, and he looked at where some of the wealth in our region was investing, and they weren't necessarily investing in local entrepreneurs. They were sending their money outside. And so I think by having an accelerator like the Sprint Accelerator, the Mobile Health Accelerator coming up, it's really galvanizing those kind of larger pools of cash to look at deals that might be happening right in our backyard. So from my perspective, a really serious contender like this Techstars powered accelerator is going to bring more capital to play in our region than take it away. I can't really speak to, you know, how that might look in another region.
That's great. I mean, and I think Techstars is a wonderful example. It's probably the best example of an accelerator program there is in the U.S. and certainly maybe even the world. I think they've really defined the hardcore boiler room type of experience for getting a project up and running and out the door. And we love them very much because we've done things with them in the past. Speaking of doing things with Microsoft, you're also in pipeline doing things with Microsoft. So in addition to having that group come out here, you're also on a regular basis introducing Microsoft tech people and ideas and all that kind of solutions to these founders. How has that experience been, and where is the value add in that relationship?
Oh, you know, this is great. One of my favorite topics. We knew when we were building pipeline, we really started building it in 2006, and there was nothing like it in the country. So we knew we were going to have to quickly bring around us, you know, national advisors, people with like real technology chops, if we were going to try to do something this aggressive in the Midwest. And so very quickly, you know, we basically, I think he would say, stalked Cliff Reeves to come in and start working with our entrepreneurs substantively, just advice and tech trends and that type of thing. Quickly, it evolved into a more robust relationship with everyone at Microsoft. Most recently, Chris Bernard and Taylor Cowan have spent a lot of time with us, serving as national mentors, advisors, judges, coming to the modules, really rolling up their sleeves. You know, Pipeline was one of the first network partners of Microsoft and BizSpark in our region. And our entrepreneurs have quickly leveraged it. You know, Ben has built a Battle Bears app. Keith Enseroth in the current class, MyInstant, has developed a Microsoft app. And both those links will be on our Facebook page, Pipeline Entrepreneurs. And we have current entrepreneurs, you know, right now working on this. So it's much more than a software partnership. They've really opened up their Rolodex, new markets. You know, Microsoft has become a substantive partner of Pipeline and a very valuable member of our family.
That's great. It's great to hear. So any more plans to have you guys come out to Silicon Valley? Are you looking at doing another round or circuit?
Yeah, well, you know, we'd like to move that fourth module, or that, you know, one of the four modules around. There's been some discussion of Seattle. There's been, last year we went to Boston. There's been also some discussion about Austin. So I don't know if the next one will be in Silicon Valley, but I can promise you this. Wherever it will be, our Microsoft advisors have already offered to open doors and help arrange some of the locations. We move a location every day of the three-day module to take advantage of meeting people in the market. So whether we're out there or not, you guys are going to be involved, I know.
Okay, thank you. And let me ask just a couple more questions, because I now have to move on to interviewing some BizSpark members. But I heard you say healthcare and mobile. What else is sort of hot in the Midwest region? Life sciences, I heard you say. Anything that you haven't mentioned that you think people might be interested in paying attention to?
Well, certainly the words around here right now are big data and agriculture. You know, everyone thinks of the Midwest, they think of agriculture. But what we're starting to see is a lot of interest in the entrepreneurship side of that. Our Innovator of the Year in 2009, Jason Taji, just this last week announced his new mobile agriculture company, which is very, very exciting. And I know that we're going to be hearing some things coming from the Kauffman Foundation on both the topics of big data and ag. So I think that those would be two things I'd add to the party. Obviously, there's some exciting things with gaming and apps all over the board. But I'd say that big data and ag are some of the newer buzzwords that I'm hearing in our backyard.
Okay, great. Well, Jenny, it's been really a great pleasure to talk to you. I know you couldn't see me today, and you had to go just by my voice.
I can imagine you.
But you've definitely captivated the audience here, and we thank you for taking your time today to talk about Pipeline. So if people want to get in touch with Pipeline, it's pipelineentrepreneurs.com, right?
Yes. And we have a Facebook page that's updated a lot more often, I must admit.
Okay, and they can go there for information. And last thing, are people who are out here in Silicon Valley doing their companies, are they invited to come check you guys out, like, on the premise, or do you only let you know, those people from those three states come in and talk?
You know, we have a lot of people come from all over the country, so I would invite people to get in touch with us. In addition, most of our entrepreneurs have friends and, you know, people that work with their teams that are located in Silicon Valley. So I would venture a guess it wouldn't take but a couple seconds to get connected to the family through our entrepreneurs as well.
Great. Well, thank you. Let's give Joni a round of applause. Thank you for spending your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, super nice person. Great. So we're going to take, I don't know if you want to stay on the line and just listen to my voice, or if you want to go get to the live stream, you can do that. Exactly. But I'm going to just pick people. If I don't pick you, it's not because I don't like your startup or you. It's just that we have a limited amount of time, and I will talk to you later, obviously. So the first person I want to call is this woman here. Your name is Elena, right? Elena. You can sit here. I picked you because you're the only woman that came into the door today.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
So welcome, and congratulations on being a woman. No, I'm just kidding. So pull the microphone close to you and maybe lift it up. I also noticed your shirt. So what does it say?
It says Sunny Karma.
Sunny Karma. What is Sunny Karma?
It says raise funds for the good cause.
Okay.
Basically, this is a social innovation enterprise that I started in spring this year. We're a member of Microsoft BizSpark. And it's a social fundraising platform. We're trying to build a philanthropical profile on the internet for individuals and companies. Think of it as your career profile on LinkedIn or your fun and personal profile on Facebook. This is going to be your transcript of every good deed that you've done in your life and how you gave back to the community and to the world. We also do a lot of charity auctions and raffles online of experiences, which means it's a sweepstakes or it's an auction. We focus on auctions primarily, but anyone can donate what we call an experience. It can be a lesson, a mentorship session, some fun activity like a flight on a private plane, can be meeting with a CEO or an investor. Basically, any kind of asset that you own that someone will find valuable, and people bid on it just like on eBay.
And this
and
is
the money goes to a good cause that you
want. And you feel good doing it, right? And you,
I feel awesome doing
you
it.
You feel good doing it.
Yes, absolutely.
You, I think I know a little bit about your story, because I actually ran into you at an event recently, and you told me that you used to be an accountant.
Yes.
And you actually quit your job to work on this stuff.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about like sort of what you went through in your head to like finally make that decision? Like, because that's a very risky decision to make.
Absolutely.
To go from a steady paycheck to building a thing that doesn't exist.
Yes. So just a little bit of a background on me. I'm originally from Siberia, a small town in Siberia that no one can ever pronounce.
Irkutsk?
No, it's called. No, it's not. Irkutsk is actually a pretty big town in Siberia. That's where Ed Content is from.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
But it's on Lake Baikal. But I'm from the town called Nizhny Vartovsk. So try to pronounce that.
Nizhny Vartovsk.
Well, it's actually pretty good. Well, yeah, you took Russian. Yeah. So yeah,
Okay. I have a lead. Go ahead.
Right. So that's where I'm originally from, and I moved here in 2000, and I went to university here. I wanted to travel around the world, so that's why I picked a profession that would allow me to do that. And I went to work for one of the big four professional services firms, Ernst & Young. I became a CPA, so I did travel. And I also worked at Genentech, Aquinix, a couple of other companies in the Valley. And then at some point, I decided to invest in startups. And then I thought, I can do my own.
So the bug came because you actually gave people money to work on something. And you're like, hey,
right.
I could actually do something. Did you actually see that this space, there was something missing? Because there are a bunch of stuff. There is a little bit of stuff out there, I think, right now.
Right.
Where... and first of all, what year were you deciding to build this?
Just in the past year, very recently.
So what was it that you thought you could do better?
Well, I guess my background in business, and I'm not a 19-year-old in college, so yeah. I do have some kind of a professional background, which I think kind of helps me to make better decisions, better business decisions. On the other hand, I have to admit that being a CPA and an auditor in the past, the auditor position is a profession is all about risk mitigation and not taking much risk. And accounting profession is, is about taking conservative positions. So I kind of have to always fight that,
So how do you navigate that? This is one of the more interesting things about starting a company, I think.
Well,
because the whole mythology about starting a company is that it's extremely risky. And that the money is supposed to help you hedge against that risk or build it so fast that you just sort of leap over the risk and you don't have to worry about it. How do you take measured approach to building what you're trying to build? And how does that influence, I guess, the decisions you're trying to make, this kind of conservative background in terms of business thinking?
Right. I think on so my profession is what I just described, but I think myself personally, I am a risk taker because, I did, kind of made a big leap by coming to America, and then, kind of had a lot of obstacles in my life that kind of helped me to get to where I am right now. I mean, just, as you said, being even a woman in America is a lot better than being a woman in other countries. So, but at the same time, so when I was an accountant, when I was a CPA, actually, the funny thing is every time people would ask me, what do you do? I said, I'm a CPA, I'm an accountant. Like, you don't look like an accountant.
What do accountants look like?
I don't know, but okay. Yeah, that's exactly the question I kept saying. I was like, well, I don't know. But accounting profession was good, and it did give me ability to travel, which is kind of the one main driver why I went to work there. Gave me good good experience. It was like a boot camp working at Big Four. But at the same time, it wasn't really what I felt I was meant to be doing. So on the personal side, I was kind of more of a risk taker. On the professional side, I did take that professional conservative
career. So you've kind of married the two now.
But at the same time, when that kind of the stars aligned, and things kind of happen. I found what I actually probably was meant to do and what I really wanted to do. And this is just the perfect combination.
So how did you use the BizSpark program to kind of help you get off your feet? Get on your feet, sorry.
Yeah.
Not off your feet. Now you're off your feet.
Right. So, this last spring I was kind of in a very high-pressure situation where I needed to build a company, like a website, very quickly because I had customers who were, like, really, really, literally waiting for it. So I was lucky enough to meet great guys from Ed Content, which...
Another BizSpark member. I don't know if anyone's
BizSpark
heard of Ed Content. They're doing a blog publishing platform, kind of a subscription-based thing. So you met these guys through the BizSpark network.
No, actually met them through, like, a birthday party. But through the birthday party, met someone else, and someone else introduced. So it's kind of like, the Silicon Valley kind of circle. Mm-hmm. But I was lucky to meet them, and basically in one day, we signed the contract on April 1st. And on May 8th, we launched an MVP. So it was like 5 weeks. And they have their own startup. So they just had, you know, they have a lot of talented engineers.
So they used one of their engineers to kind of help build your
group,
MVP.
They have like eight or seven talented engineers in Russia. So they had a little bit of bandwidth. So they decided to help me. And, you know, in 5 weeks later, we launched on campus at my university, San Jose State. Because we had one of my accounting professors actually died of cancer 6 months before that, December last year. And we wanted to do a fundraiser for them, for him, for the memorial scholarship that was established in his honor. So we launched on campus, we did that. And then from then on, you know, right now we're just kind of iterating on the platform. And
you're using a Microsoft stack to do some of this, right?
Yes.
So what parts of it are you using? What are you leveraging in that?
So I'm not a technical person. Okay. Actually, I'm actually looking for a CTO and co-founder. So if anyone's interested, come talk to me.
And need some spare cash, maybe? Or do you want them to do it for free?
Well, I'm bootstrapping, so I'm actually self-financing the startup right now. So, I mean, we can talk about options, but I mean, we obviously have, you know, stock.
Okay.
And we will be, we will start raising from investors probably Q1, Q2 this year.
Today is a special day, right? Code.org has launched their...
Yes.
Are you taking part in that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I thought so.
Right.
What's going on with that?
So Code.org is a nonprofit that we're featuring actually this month. I know the founders, and they basically are launching a nationwide, but even beyond the U.S., the campaign that encourages schools in America to teach at least an hour of code this week. And all Apple stores in America are going to be hosting an hour of code, I believe, on December 11. Obama did a speech yesterday on the internet, encouraging everyone to... So basically, they're trying to change the educational system in the U.S. because right now, 9 out of 10 schools don't even teach computer science, so it's not...
So how is your platform helping that? You're trying to help people meet the right people to do this? Or?
So we actually... We have corporate sponsors, Bain Network, and they were gracious enough to donate $10,000 worth of equipment, IT equipment or network equipment. And we announced kind of like a competition. So basically any school can participate. And we actually just emailed all the schools in the U.S. today, this morning, before we came here.
Fantastic.
Yes, we spent the whole weekend gathering emails from, you know, public websites. And we emailed everyone.
You did a mass campaign.
Everyone we could. Yeah, we did a mass campaign. But basically a lot of schools already hosting an hour of code. But a lot of schools we're encouraging to do so. And if they do that, and then we have a kind of like an essay contest. So basically just write us a small story, like how did it happen? And the best top three stories will get the prize of $10,000. We'll split it in three prizes.
Well, I have to stop you there because we have to interview two more people. But you have one more thing to tell me?
Yes, one more thing. I wanted to invite everyone to our Christmas benefit party on December 18th.
Eggnog.
In San Francisco at the Vessel. And the cool thing about
Where is it?
Vessel. Okay. It's a club called Vessel, one of the top venues in San Francisco close to Union Square. The cool thing about it is we're going to do charity raffle, charity sweepstakes.
Yeah.
And the prizes include flight on a private plane, like a four-seater. Mm-hmm. You can land in Half Moon Bay, have a dinner, and then we can fly you back. iPad Mini 2, also donated by Bay Network, our corporate sponsor. And then tickets to Justin Timberlake show, tickets to Kiwi Time show. And it's raffle tickets, $15. And it
like
goes to a good cause.
Can you make sure I win that? No,
yes,
I'm kidding.
Yes.
We'll try to get you like a 15, 20 that you can give away or something.
Perfect.
We'll talk about that.
Let's do it.
I'd love to see people use this stuff.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Elena.
Thank
for
you.
Taking your time to
Thanks
talk
Thanks for having
these
me.
Things. And I'm going to take this guy over here. I've never met him before. And he randomly found out about this just recently. Your name is it Guile? Guile, nice to meet you. Just pull the microphone close to you.
Sure.
We were talking earlier before the show, you're also developing something for mobile,
right?
Why don't you tell us what it is?
Okay, product is Mobile Vaults, and what Mobile Vaults does is it lets you forget remembering and changing your passwords.
Okay.
And what it does is it controls all your passwords or stores them all on your smartphone for you, and then when you need them, either on your smartphone or on your laptop or tablet, then wirelessly it'll connect and fill in those credentials for you.
So let's talk about how you've iterated the product or how you've made the product. You've got 200 beta users now.
Right.
Right. So how did you go back to when you came up with it? What was the path of...
Two and a half years ago, I thought it was an Android app. I put together an Android proof of concept, and I thought I was going to go to market with that.
Yeah.
And I discovered something called App Campus.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that
Microsoft
was a
Nokia yep. partnership. So they offered a grant to port the product, or basically make the product run on a Windows Phone. And so I took them up on that.
Okay.
On that grant.
How did you actually find the beta users for this?
I found most of them actually through WMPowerUsers.com. I did a little press release that the beta was coming, and got a big spike in web traffic, and they signed up for the beta.
And so what do people like about this? Because I have to be honest, when I first thought about the idea, my first question mark was, well, I know it's frustrating to have passwords and to remember them.
Right?
And it's a control issue for me, because
I think
I'd really like to be the only person who knows that this is the password.
Yeah,
but you say that people are fine with turning that process over to, is it just machine?
Not everyone.
I mean, what kind of person likes this?
People who realize that their passwords are easily compromised in through a variety of situations. Man in the middle through hotspots is fairly common now. There's been a lot of news press
like at
on
airports,
that.
Right? Where airports, you might be checking your bank stuff.
Cafes,
on
cafes, whatever. You know, stuff that's just freely available. And then plus, people are starting to clue in that employers as well will have proxies, and they end up doing man in the middle. Mm-hmm. And their goal is to look to make sure their stuff isn't being, you know, pilfered. Mm-hmm. But they also end up finding out, the staff can find out what your passwords are and what have you. So you have to change. If you're in those environments, you have to know it, and you have to change your passwords regularly.
Right. So this kind of builds in a little bit of self-awareness for the user that they don't actually have to worry about. So
Correct.
It's like letting the phone be self-aware in a sense. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. So what are the plans for the phone? Like, is it an app, or is it a feature of
it's an app for Windows Phone, and we're still looking for beta users if people would like to sign up.
Yeah. How do they get in touch with you?
MobileVaults.com is our site, and you can't miss the beta sign up.
Okay.
You can't miss it.
Thank you, Guy. This is good.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything, before I let you go, is there anything that you think that people of mobile phones need to be thinking about? What do you think is going to be happening with the industry? Are we going to a more mobile-centric kind of lifestyle, or you think that...
I think everything is revolving around mobile.
Yeah.
I think everything is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, best of luck to Guile here. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to take one more person. I hate having to choose people, because then people think that I hate them or I don't like you. I'm going to choose you, because you were talking about developing your mobile game for Windows first rather than for iOS, right? And so your name is?
Ishai. And I'm working with my co-founder.
A little closer to the microphone. Yeah.
I'm working with my co-founder, Mehmet, on a game called Masters of Trivia. It's released for Windows Phone exactly a week ago.
Yeah.
Yes, we did it Windows Phone first.
Talk about this stuff, because you've told this story to us before. I was debriefing you before we started the show. I thought it was very interesting that you chose Windows first, and you had about three reasons, I think. Am I remembering this right? There was like a few reasons why you purposely didn't want to start with iOS.
Well, so the first reason, we started this at the hackathon, actually.
Okay.
So we were going to do Windows Phone and iPhone. I was going to build the Windows Phone and the back end on Azure, because BizSpark gives me credits for Azure. And my partner Mehmet was going to do the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And we noticed the Windows Phone app was going a lot faster. The development is easier. The tools are better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a better platform.
Specifically with the tools, what was easy about the tools, and which tools are you talking about?
Well, it's Visual Studio. I think anyone who's using more than one tool knows it's the best one out there.
Yeah.
When you compare it to Xcode, I don't use Eclipse, but IntelliJ or other tools for Java. It's just a lot better, especially if you use some plugins like ReSharper. It's just an easier tool to work with.
And how fast do you think you were able to put this? I mean, how much faster do you think you were able to put it together, and how fast did you put it together?
So it took, that hackathon was 2 months ago. We've been out for a week now, so it took 6 weeks.
You decided to do iOS. It only took, 2 months to build this and put this together, or less than that?
The Windows Phone version, server-side, and the client, 2 months. Half the time was tweaking, actually. The app came together very quickly.
Do you think it's worth it for people to go for the Windows Marketplace first, the Windows Phone?
I think you need to try do what you're strong with first.
Yeah.
If you're really strong with one platform, it could make sense to do that first.
Okay.
Once you get feedback, after you build a product, even if you don't release it, you learn a lot of stuff along the way.
Okay.
So where we started, what we did for the hackathon in 2 days, is not where we are now. All that learning, we're doing on the first go on iOS, instead of learning along the way and changing two platforms or three platforms, it's just one. A lot of people do iOS first because they think that market is bigger. So if you're an iOS developer, it makes sense to do that first. Mm-hmm. I'm a .NET developer. I've been a .NET developer since it came out. So yeah, it made more sense for me to do that first.
It was very easy to get to that place. So what do you think, what's next for your team? And what do you want to do now? I mean, have you gotten comfortable with the platform and you think that that's actually worthwhile to pay attention to it? Or you know, focus just on this game and putting it on other platforms, or what's going
to
happen?
So the next step is to do the iPhone version. It's in progress. It'll be out in a few weeks.
Okay.
We need to add a lot of content to the game. Everybody plays the same game at the same time. It's a real-time online game.
Okay.
And the questions are on the server, so we need to keep adding more questions.
Okay.
And then at some point, we'll do other platforms as well. Windows 8, Android. But right now, Windows Phone and iOS soon. That's our focus.
Awesome. Well, you can sit right there because I'm going to close out the show. But and what's the name of the?
It's called Masters of Trivia. You can find
Masters
it on the Windows Phone Store.
It's on the Windows Phone Store. Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being a live studio audience. I think you don't clap yet because it'll ruin my flow. But it's been wonderful to have you here. And it's great to hear about the ideas that I have heard about. And if I haven't heard about your idea yet, we can talk about it over pizza because we're all going to go have some refreshments and some pizza. And you can find this program on live stream, but also on channel9.com/BizSpark, I believe, the BizSpark show. But you can easily find it if you do a search on Bing or on Google. And we'll be doing this next week with Howard Lindzen, who's the founder of StockTwits. And we're going to talk to him about his real-time crowd aggregating software that basically on the web helps people understand exactly what people are thinking about the market. And I'm going to ask him a bunch of questions about how having a lot of that data all at once can help people make smart choices about their investment strategies and whatnot. Thanks for being a great audience, and we'll see you next time, maybe online. All right.